Robert's going to help me with the first part of my sermon. It's a video, and what I want you to do when you watch the video, and the announcer is going to give you instructions also, but I want you to watch the people in white, and you have to count how many times they pass the basketball to each other. If you know this, don't tell anybody else, all right? Because I know some of you have probably seen this before. But so very carefully, watch, count how many times the people in white pass the basketball. Didn't see the gorilla.
Really? Wow. that's really funny.
I hope you liked my introduction. I played this particular video because I wanted to demonstrate how we all have things we focus on to the exclusion of other things. In this case, it would not have been the end of the world if you did not spot the gorilla. But it demonstrates that all of us focus on things that are relevant at any given moment and discount things that are not important. In the same way we focus on very specific things, we see our world oftentimes through very specific lenses. Or frames. I talked about stories last week and the effect they have on us and how we experience and even act on them in our world. Frames are the container with which we hold those stories and with those stories create a particular worldview or ideology. All of us live with frames that shape our understanding. I called my sermon The Immanent Frame. This title comes from the work of philosopher of religion Charles Taylor, from his book, A Secular Age. It's a huge, fat book that traces the history of the movement of thought from the 16th century, when it was almost unthinkable not to believe in God, to the present day, when for some it is almost unthinkable to believe in God. This exclusively secular worldview that has developed over time is what he calls the immanent frame. That is, the world can be seen and experienced entirely in terms of the material part of the world. And it's devoid of what he refers to as the opposite, the transcendent in our world, where there is a possibility of spirits and demons and other non-material beings that somehow influence our existence. This is the dominant frame in the modern West. Most of us take it for granted. We know that the world has certain laws and forces examined and studied through physics, biology, chemistry, and the other sciences that help us explain this material plane. Now, I love to study world religions. I have been part of interfaith groups for much of my adult life. Many of these groups have had a particular focus that was the impetus for their formation, studying climate change through the lens of multiple religious traditions, looking at the way women navigate religious faith through the lens of gender, looking at racial inequities and how religious faith can either be used to exacerbate inequality, but can also provide comfort. I worked for the Religious Literacy Project at Harvard, an organization that strives to teach people about the complexity of religious faith and its role in history and contemporary culture. Its director, my academic advisor, created this massive open online course, MOOC, The World Religions Through Their Scriptures, Maybe some of you participated. It happened a couple years ago. In the introduction of the course, students are asked to watch the video of a TED Talk by the Nigerian writer Chimamanda Ngozi Adichie called The Danger of a Single Story. In it, she said, a single story of any people is dangerous because a single story may create stereotypes. And she said the thing about stereotypes is that they might be true, but they are incomplete. They make one story of a people the only story. In his book, The Wayfinders, anthropologist and ethnobiologist Wade Davis looks at the ways in which non-Western cultures he has studied have thrived despite colonization and attempted destruction of their culture, and how they have reclaimed cultural memory and traditions. Davis tells the story of the Polynesian people whom he has lived with and worked with, and who he has traveled extensively through the Pacific Islands. When European colonizers first encountered this people, they wondered how they had populated such a wide range of islands that spanned thousands of kilometers. The frame through which they viewed these people was through the frame of colonizer and dominator. It was outside their frame to see that one of the most prestigious roles within the culture was that of navigator. The people of Polynesia had been navigating and moving between and among these islands for several centuries, far longer than the European colonizers had even understood navigation. And they had been doing it without the use of written instruction, navigational tools, or GPS. They had learned to navigate through watching star, cloud, and wind patterns, and understanding how water and land interacted. They held mental maps of the patterns of the islands so they could find them again. They have preserved these abilities to the present day through oral tradition. The European colonizers held a single story about who these people were and what they might be capable of, and so could not initially fathom that within the culture was contained a complex set of skills which they themselves, the colonizers, were incapable. The danger of a single story. Charles Taylor's point in introducing the concept of an immanent frame was in order to question it and see how permeable it was. He talked about what he called closed world structures. That is, for some people, the immanent frame, that is a wholly secular worldview, became the only frame. Those who held this frame could not even fathom that another frame or way of viewing the world could be valid. Taylor stresses in his book that the history and trajectory that led to the immanent frame is a very specific Western history. It is not the same in other places. I started studying world religions because I had a professor when I was in graduate school more than 20 years ago who was a scholar of Jewish thought and traditions, especially as they related to Christian scriptures. He was active in a local synagogue. He was also a Roman Catholic priest. He helped me see the delving deeply into another's religious space in a respectful and personal way enables one to understand both the other tradition and one's own tradition in new and revelatory ways. And in taking a class on comparative theology in my most recent sojourn in graduate school, we explored Hindu and Christian texts through the lens of Hindu scholars interpreting Christian texts and Christian scholars interpreting Hindu texts. How this brings more nuance to the text, but also allowed me to see where the scholarship made sense to me personally and where it didn't. Charles Taylor also sees the possibility of the immanent frame as being open. People can see and experience the world through a secular frame, but also be open to the possibility that others might see the world through a transcendent frame and might find that experience valuable. There are three basic premises of the study of religion in the Religious Literacy Project. The first is that religious traditions are internally diverse. The answer to the question, are Christianity or Islam or Judaism or any other world religion, religions of violence or religions of peace? And the answer is yes. Because religious responses vary over time. A couple of years ago, I was in a class that was part of the Religions and the Practice of Peace Initiative. I got to spend a day with Pastor James Bouye and Imam Muhammad Ashafa. They are the founders of the Interfaith Mediation Center in Nigeria. They demonstrated for our class the mediation techniques that they use to help diffuse religious conflict in various places in the globe. Their history is not one of peacemaking. In the early 1990s, as tensions were rising between Christian and Muslim factions in the Nigerian town of Kaduna, they were leaders in youth gangs escalating the violence. Both lost family members and mentors to the violence, and Pastor James lost his hand. During a conference, a mutual acquaintance introduced them. After the encounter, each man had a personal religious revelation that their respective religious traditions could be used either to promote violence or to promote peace. It was up to them to choose which one. Through a very, at first, tenuous relationship, they began to develop a deep trust in each other, and their friendship sparked them to consider alternatives to violence in the conflict in Nigeria. Their friendship enabled them to broker peace in a conflict in which they had originally instigated the violence. To meet them, it is hard to imagine either of them as violent individuals. They are both gentle souls. The second premise of the Religious Literacy Project is that religions change over time. They are not static. And the third is that they are contextual. That is, they are inextricably linked to the time, place, and culture in which they are practiced. The Christianity, Judaism, or whatever of our parents, or even of our childhood, is not the same as it is today. Unitarian Universalism today is not the same Unitarianism of Francis David of the 16th century. Nor is it the same as the Unitarianism or Universalism of the early 19th century. We are not just the humanists of the Humanist Manifesto of the early 20th century. All of these things shaped us. But we now have Buddhist UUs and Muslim UUs, and they bring with them their contribution to our tradition. We adapt, we reflect on context and culture, and we change. In opening the immanent frame farther, and we realize the possibility not just of understanding that other people hold different views, but to actually engage in the possibility and to learn more from others who hold frames outside our own. Here's the thing about thoughtful interreligious encounter. It is not meant to convert. It is not meant to make humanists Christians or Jews Hindus or vice versa, although either of these things can happen. It is meant to create deeper relationships across boundaries of difference. It is meant to open us up to a way of seeing that expands our perception of the world. It is meant to change us. This is incredibly important because we live in one of the most religiously diverse countries in the world, and it behooves us to understand each other, even if we can't always agree. Just in a couple blocks around here, there's an Islamic academy, a Pentecostal Christian church, and a Buddhist temple. That we are diverse is a given. How we respond to and live into that diversity is up to us. The European encounter with the Polynesian people shaped the trajectory and history of that area. Once the Europeans recognized the navigational skills of the Pacific Islanders, For good or ill, they helped the colonizers map those islands. They opened up their minds, the colonizers, to a larger story of who those people were. And both the colonizer and the colonized were changed. The invisible gorilla in our midst is this reality of religious diversity. It is all around us, and it is among us here within our room filled with Unitarian Universalism. We can ignore it, or we can engage it deeply. We can remain mired in a single story about other religious traditions, or we can immerse ourselves in their deep complexity. The choice is ours. Amen and blessed be.